Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Football Absurdity Podcast. This is the episode 26 podcast. I'm Crisco here with my co-host, Mike Valverde. We've been off for a month, but guess what? Government's back open, so we're getting funded again. We can we have the podcast funds. Mike got sick. His wife got sick. My wife got sick. It's January, so there's not a lot of fantasy football stuff to go on. Specifically, it's January 25th, as you can tell by my hey, government's back open for the first time in a well, it will be. Mike, how you been in this time off other than sick?
I've been up and down. You know, we'll get into a little bit later, but the Colts made the playoffs. That was a high point. And then, of course, the Colts lost in the playoffs.
They won a game.
They did win a game. They did win a game. So, yeah, it's been an up and down kind of, you know, situation for me, as you mentioned, sick. And so, yeah, a roller coaster kind of ride for the last month, I would say.
Could be worse. Niners haven't been in a playoff game in like 5 years. So, I mean, could be worse. But that could change. Apparently, Antonio Brown today tweeted out or sent out a photo on Instagram of him in a 49ers jersey again.
Wow.
That would be nice. I mean, sure, he's a diva, but I feel like him and Richard Sherman can go have diva corner, and as long as I do not mind that one bit if they want to do that.
Okay, answer me this question.
Yeah.
And no offense to the 49ers, but I'm going to offend the 49ers.
They stink.
What's up?
Why in the world would Antonio Brown want to go to San Francisco at the end of his career?
Because, I'm sure he's a smart guy. So he was like, where can I go where they won't make me take a pay cut? And where can I go where I will be the unquestioned number one? Because Dante Pettis is all right, but he's not even in the same ballpark as Juju Smith-Schuster, he would be the fourth best wide receiver on the Steelers by some measures. Like, he would be behind James Washington. I think he's on par with James Washington, but I think he's wants to go somewhere that can pay him. He'll be the unquestioned number one. And Jimmy G's coming back, and then Kyle Shanahan. I mean, say what you want about the 49ers on defense, which they're garbage. I mean, he had Nick Mullins out there throwing for like 400 yards and, you know, 400 yards a game. So I think it's just he sees a place where he can be the man and potentially bring the team to the playoffs. Because say the Niners trade, I don't know. They're not going to trade their first round pick, obviously. But if they trade their like second this year and second next year, maybe a second this year and a second and a third next year, something like that. They can retool the defense. They can have the offense humming because they got the offensive line going last year. They're one of the best in the NFL, especially on run blocking. That's why I had doofuses like Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson, ripping off 100-yard games out of nowhere. It's because their scheming and their talents finally coming together on the line. Not quite like Indy did this year, but I mean, they went from one of the worst in the league to, you know, middle of the pack. And Kyle Shanahan's, you know, mastery. I think all of that together, and I think that's why, you know, he wants to go to San Francisco. I know one of the reasons I'm sure you're asking this is like, well, I know a team that has a lot of cap space, has a great quarterback, has a great offense, was in the playoffs this year, is the team that I root for. Like, I don't understand why he's angling so hard at San Francisco over Indianapolis, because you guys have a ton of cap room, if I'm understanding that correctly. Like, because I know Indianapolis is in the Le'Veon Bell sweepstakes because of all that cap room. So I'm not sure. I mean, that's why I think, and I think maybe also because it's a prestige franchise, you know, going from, you know, it would be really weird if Antonio Brown, you know, busted his way out of the Steelers and went to like Tampa Bay. You know, they're not really like a legacy franchise like the Niners are.
Yeah. I think what the Colts will do is they'll sign Le'Veon Bell and then use him to bring over Antonio Brown, and the Steelers will be united again, except for they'll be the Colts and not
man. If I don't know if he would like for correct me if I'm wrong, but I T.Y. Hilton, by all things that I understand, he's just like a laid back guy. He doesn't have a lot of drama or anything around him or really personality. So like, I just picture like Antonio Brown just being like, T.Y., I'm the man now. I'm number one. And him just being like, all right, cool, man.
Take it away.
Whatever you say. I'll just do whatever you say. Granted, that's my impression of T.Y. Hilton. Just because, I mean, it's entirely based on he has sleepy eyes. So I kind of roll with him because he's got. So I just think he'd just be like, all right, man, cool. Like, whatever you want. I'll be the number two. Yeah. So that would be cool for you guys. That would suck for us because that would be, I would love for to have Jimmy G, Jerick McKinnon, and Antonio Brown together next year with George Kittle. Ooh, baby. You got you an offense going.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. As a season ticket holder, I can't tell you, honestly, a lot of the time, you know, if the team won or lost the game. I can because when I moved to the Bay Area and I got my season tickets at Candlestick, they were winning. And then when they went to Levi's, they were losing. So I can make a good guess. But I can tell you all the fun games I went to. And if they're scoring a lot of points, that's a fun game. So for purely selfish reasons, I'm like, yeah, load up that offense. Who cares about the defense? Just load up that offense so I can, you know, go to the games, have some fun. And that's what I remember. So very selfishly hoping AB comes to the Niners. But this is not a Niners podcast. Well, if it was a Niners podcast, it would explain why we went dark for the last month. Much like the Niners. But what we're going to do is we'll talk about the playoffs a little bit today. We're going to bust out our top five at each position for 2019. Just preliminary, just talk about some guys. Mike, I'm really looking forward to find out who your number four kicker is. Just kidding. We're not going to talk about if we talk about kickers, it'll be literally the first time I think on the podcast we've talked about kickers. So we'll just get started. We'll start talking about our position guys. We'll go position by position. We won't talk a lot about every guy because we'll be here for forever because that's 20 guys plus all the playoff games. But we'll start with quarterback. We're just going to go 5-3-1. Mike, who's your number five quarterback for 2019?
My number five quarterback is probably, you know, I'm going to go with Deshaun Watson.
Okay.
And here's what. I think in the beginning of the year, he struggled quite a bit. And then slowly as the year went on, he got better and better and started becoming more of that consistent quarterback that he showed in his rookie season. I don't think he's worthy as a any more than that. I think you're probably taking a risk if you put him any higher than number five. So it's just like that peg that fits really nicely, or that puzzle piece that, you know, when you put those two puzzle pieces together, you know they belong. It's in that form that's why I picked Deshaun Watson at five.
Deshaun Watson, all right, five. All right. I'll talk about Deshaun Watson. You said, you know, he's pretty secure there at number five. The guy that I think there is pretty secure there at number five, I have Watson at four. That's where he ended up this year on a points per game basis. He was the number four quarterback on the year. And he kind of, out of the gate, he was a little, he stumbled a little bit early part of the season. Not really out of the gate, but sort of in the middle. He had some games like he had 7 fantasy points, 11 fantasy points, 11 fantasy points. Just not what you would expect, but he ended the season on a bang. He had at least 16 fantasy points in Yahoo scoring, so that's 4 points per passing touchdown leagues in every game from week 8 through the wild card game except week 11. So he kind of ended the season hot. He does it with his legs. He's got 4 rushing touchdowns since week 12 last year. He has a lot of rushing yards. He's kind of the new an improved young Russell Wilson, because we don't realize this, but Russell Wilson's getting up there in age. Like, Russell Wilson is already 30. So you can see that his running numbers have kind of gone down. And Deshaun Watson's a lot like that young Russell Wilson, where he's got that Deshaun Watson BS, where he kind of makes chicken salad out of chicken you know what during every play. So I put him at 4 ahead of Russell Wilson, just kind of as a nod to Deshaun Watson being the younger version of Russell Wilson. I do think Wilson's going to bounce back this year. So Russell Wilson had 0 rushing touchdowns this year. He had 3 the year before. He's had 1 rushing touchdown before, but he gets a lot of rushing yards, a lot of rushing touchdowns, but 376 yards and 0 touchdowns were lows for him. So I think he'll bounce back in the rushing department, and they can't lean on Chris Carson so much as they did this year, because he will break easily. He has broken in the past. So I put Wilson at 5. Just, he's got that cheat code thing, with his legs. I think he'll bounce back, but I did put Watson at 4 just as a nod to, I think, better offense. That's more built around passing the ball as opposed to the Seattle style, which is slow the game down, ground and pound, and then, you know, throw a bomb up to Tyler Lockett when it's third and 8, throw a 50-yard bomb for a touchdown, because that's what it felt like they did. It was pound it, pound it, pound it, pound it, and when you're in third and long, bomb it out to Tyler Lockett. So I had Wilson at 5, Watson at 4. So who is your number 4 guy this year?
I actually had the same thing. I had it reversed. I had Wilson at 4. So pretty much for the same reasons that you've talked about. With Wilson and Watson, you're both, as you mentioned, they're just sort of interchangeable. I just think that with Wilson, there's more longevity to him. There's more of a proof that he can do it. With Watson, you're looking at maybe a year and a half of just up and down football. And so the consistency isn't there yet for Watson, which it very well could be next year. But at this point, I'm going to go with the one that's proven, and that'd be Wilson at 4.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that's it. It depends on how you look at it. They're kind of, you see Russell Wilson getting old, but I mean, he's air quotes only 30. So it's not like he's 35, 36 getting up there, but I just put Watson. I would take Watson over Wilson because I think that Watson, we haven't seen peak Deshaun Watson yet, and I kind of think we've seen peak Russell Wilson, if that makes sense. I would be happy, you know, either one of them at the same if I could get Russell Wilson 2 rounds later than Deshaun Watson, I would probably take Russell Wilson. But if all things concerned, same price, I would take Watson over Wilson. So that is our 4 and 5 guy. We had the same guy, Watson, Wilson. Full disclosure, we put this together to do this towards the end of the season. I had Cam Newton above both of them. But then we have the whole thing where he might not play next year. Even if he does play, he's not healthy. So I dropped him out of the top 5 entirely, because I liked what they did with the offense towards the end of the year, where they got, they ditched Devin Funchess, and we're going towards the more quick attack with Moore and Curtis Samuel. So I thought that he was going to be a good talent for 2019, but alas, he was hurt. So who is your number 3 guy this year?
You know, I think number 3, I'm probably going to go. He tailed in pretty hardcore at the end of the year, but that offense that he plays in is so dynamic, and that's Jared Goff.
Whoa, wow.
Yeah, I think that when you're built around the offense that Jared Goff has, it's sort of almost impossible to fall on your face, even though Jared Goff, to me, is not a super stud quarterback. I think he's probably above average, kind of. If he was on probably almost any team that had an average offense, I don't think you would see the numbers Jared Goff produces. So with that said, he does play in says, I mean, he could throw it to almost anybody and they're going to do something with the ball. So
at yeah, that they point, had, they had Josh Reynolds come out of the woodwork and do stuff yeah. for him. They had the tight ends pop up towards the end of the year. So they got CJ Anderson.
Yeah. Who's
like, who, come on. So
yeah, who the Raiders didn't want and the Panthers didn't want, who had a, like a combined record of like 4-30 or some combined something. Yeah, ridiculous.
Yeah. Ooh, buddy. That was yeah, that's not great.
Yeah. So it, yeah, it's, I just think it's almost impossible for Jared Goff to be not produce the numbers that he's capable of as far as in that offense and just being mediocre enough to put up good fantasy points.
You know what he is? He is a souped up version of non 2017 version of Chiefs Alex Smith in a better offense. He, because he has good weapons around him and he has good surrounding cast and he knows what to do and he won't screw it up. And so that's kind of the Alex Smith MO is he knows what he's doing. He's not going to blow it. That's kind of what Jared Goff feels like, but in a super high powered offense. So that kind of supports your point. He's not in my top five. He's probably 6 or 7. I'm not sure what I want to do with Drew Brees right now, but you know, he's probably 6 or 7 for me, but I do like top three. That is a bold call for Mr. Jared Goff. So my number three guy, it's Aaron Rodgers. I probably will never draft him anywhere, but it's they've got a new coach for the first time in a long time. He's Aaron freaking Rodgers. Despite all the just terrible offense that got Mike McCarthy fired and the fact that he was hurt all year. I mean, he played through it, but he was still hurt all year. He's still Aaron freaking Rodgers. He ended if you hung on to him, he ended the fantasy playoffs with a 442-yard, 2-touchdown game. And he rushed for 32 yards in the game and 2 touchdowns. Do you know why I know these numbers? Do you know why these numbers are burned into my head? Why? Because it was an overtime game. And he had the 2 rushing touchdowns and the passing touchdown, I believe, all in the fourth quarter. And I know this because the guy that I was playing against in my league with my high school friends, the league that I care about most, he had Aaron Rodgers, and he was playing against me in the final. So Aaron Rodgers going off in week 16 will always be burned into my brain. Because I was at the 49ers game, and I was following on my phone, and I just saw touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. And I will never forget that Aaron Rodgers game. No, just like I'll never forget that Jamal Charles 5-touchdown game from like 2014, because I was playing against that guy too. But back to actual analysis. I mean, he's Aaron Rodgers. He'll be in a new offense. It is Matt LaFleur. Matt LaFleur was kind of a new OC last year with the Titans. He tried to do square peg round hole with Deion Lewis until he finally realized, I think he had some growing pains last year. Because down the stretch, once he was like, oh, I have Derrick Henry, let me just run Derrick Henry out there every single play and he'll bash over people because everybody's tired. He kind of stopped trying to fit the players to the scheme and started fitting the scheme to the players. And going to Green Bay, I'm going to keep an open mind. I'm going to think that Aaron Rodgers will be healthy. Matt LaFleur will be better than Mike McCarthy. And he'll bounce back to his top three form. Because last year, Aaron Rodgers' first game, years where he played more than half the game, so seasons he didn't get hurt in, like 2013, 2017, he had his lowest touchdown total. So I was kind of like, ooh, that's going to regress upwards. Plus another year with Allison, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, all the other rookies, Equanimeous, St. Brown, just a lot of guys that will have another year with Aaron Rodgers. I just think he'll take a step forward again and not be the number one guy like he's been in the past, because I think I know who we're both putting at number one. But to be a top three guy for sure, I think he'll jump back into that.
Yeah, I definitely think he had 25 touchdowns this year. I think he's going to have at least 30 next year. Drew Brees had 24 the year before and had 32 this year. So I kind of
exactly
see the same kind of progression out of Aaron Rodgers. That whole season wasn't really on him anyways. It was just, as you're saying, just it was a mess, and he suffered from it, and I don't really see him being this plateaued at what he is now. I definitely see an improvement. So, I don't have any problems with him at three at all.
Yeah. Plus he was throwing touchdowns at a much lower rate compared to his yardage. Cause he had 4,400 yards this year. But he only had 25 touchdowns, and every other time he threw, you know, in that 4,400 yard range, he had 40 touchdowns, 38 touchdowns, 39 touchdowns, 45 touchdowns. It's like, all right, so I think I know where the problem is here. It was touchdowns. So he'll bounce back, and I don't think he'll be at a great value going into 2019. But I do think that he's definitely, if you're itchy thinking that he's falling off a cliff, I don't think that that's what's going to happen. So number two guy, just start talking about Andrew Luck. Go for it.
you guessed right again, and it is Andrew Luck at number two. There's no one better than at this point better than Patrick Mahomes. The guy is just freakishly awesome. He has the canny ability to play baseball while throwing a football. The sidearm stuff. There's nobody can do that. And with that offense that they have in the mind of Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes is definitely the number one, which leaves, of course, Andrew Luck at number two. And the bounce back candidate of the year, which he should have, and threw for almost 40 touchdowns. He hit the 39 mark with pretty much 4,600 yards. So he was just awesome all year. He had, I think maybe, I mean, if you discount the first four games that he played, where they were just throwing maybe 2 yards at a time and just going, okay, how good is Andrew Luck's arm? Let's just take it slowly by surely and see what he can do. Let's not just put him into full game mode right away and take it slow. So the first four games, he wasn't throwing much at all as far as downfield. Then they realized, okay, his arm's going to be okay. Let's put him out there and let's do normal game stuff. And he blew it up from there. So 39 touchdowns, 46 yards in probably 12 games should, is just remarkable in itself. And I think he had a great stretch run of like 3 touchdowns per game for like 6 games or something to that effect. The offensive line is great. It's only going to get better. There's just no doubt about that. Andrew Luck's in number two and should be number two on everybody's list.
Yeah, I mean, he ended the year at number six, but like you said, I mean, at the beginning of the season, it was like they were trying to protect him. They were trying to make sure he didn't, re-injure his shoulder. And I remember there was the Hail Mary that they put Jake Brisket in for. And then everybody was like, is Andrew Luck's arm okay? Yeah. And Frank Reich was like, all right, you know what? You want to see how good Andrew Luck's arm is? Fine. Because it felt like after that point, they just unleashed him. Like every arm, and then they were like, all right, fine. You want to see that he's fine? We'll show you that he's fine. And then he turned into a psycho monster on offense. And I kind of think that also coincided, correct me if I'm wrong, very close to when Marlon Mack came back. So maybe opening up the run game opened up the passing game as well. They weren't just keying, you know, they could essentially ignore the run game because it was a bunch of junk before Marlon Mack came back. No offense to Jordan Wilkins and Nyheim Hines, but I think that you know they'll have the whole gang in 2019 with Jack Doyle coming back and Eric Ebron another year from my boy Eric, and I agree he's number two. He's probably the only quarterback I feel that has a chance at challenging Patrick Mahomes, but I mean Pat Mahomes, 5,000 yards, 50 touchdowns, and that was his first the 15 games that he played in the fantasy regular season. those were games 2 through 16 of his career. He was essentially a rookie. I mean, that was absurd. Probably the biggest, sleeper thing ever. He was a, quarterback 15, 16, 17 during the draft, quarterback 1 on the year, almost 5,100 yards, 50 touchdowns. And everybody's saying, hey, Pat Mahomes, he's going to regress. He's going to regress. This man's not going to average 5,000, 5,100 yards and 50 touchdowns for his entire career. Like, sorry, to be a wet blanket, but that's going to happen. But here's the good news. I looked at some numbers. So in a year where we had all time historic highs for fantasy point production for quarterbacks, a rule of thumb in a 4-point league before was, hey, if you get 18 points from your quarterback, that's probably a quarterback 1 in a 4-point per touchdown league. It's 20 points in a 6-point league. There were 16 different quarterbacks who averaged 18 fantasy points per game this year. So that number has got to get bumped up to 20 in a 4-point per passing touchdown league. And he's still in this era where it was just quarterback production was just out the wazoo. If he threw 800 fewer yards and 8 fewer touchdowns, he would still be the quarterback 1 on the season.
Jesus.
He had 4.7 points per game more than the number 2 guy, which was Ryan Fitzpatrick. Remember Ryan Fitzpatrick? He blew up the league. And so it was like, just, it was monstrous that in a year where there was monstrous production, he was far, far and away above that. So if next year he only throws for 4,300 yards and 42 touchdowns, well, congratulations. By these numbers, he's still the number 1 quarterback. So he would have to take a massive step back for that to be wrong or some sort of injury. And he lost. It wasn't like everything went great for the Chiefs either, because they lost Kareem Hunt halfway through the year. Tyreek Hill got banged up. Sammy Watkins got hurt. And they just kept rolling. So they have the perfect formula there, like you mentioned, with Reed, with the talent around him, with the bad defense that, Pat Mahomes, he can do everything. One of the time that I told somebody to keep Kirk Cousins and trade Pat Mahomes after his first few games will probably go down as the worst advice I've ever given, but thankfully he didn't listen to me. So I'm just in awe of Pat Mahomes. So we'll move on real quick, cause we are burning time. We'll move on to running back. Maybe we won't take up too much time, but who's your number 5 running back in 2019?
Well, I think if we're talking standard league formats, I'm going to go with Christian McCaffrey. He's just a PPR machine. And he, as far as like touchdowns and those kind of things, he had 7 touchdowns on the year, which is just 1 more than I think Jordan Howard. So he's not going to get in by rushing the ball. Yes, he does something. Of course, his yards are going to be expounded with catching the ball and running, but it's to the degree where it's such a drawback that most of his yards come from the receiving end that it's just going to hamper his production value in standard leagues. And therefore, I'm going to go with Christian McCaffrey at number 5. Now, if it was PPR, I would definitely say he's a number 2, maybe even close to a number 1. He just keeps climbing the charts every single year. I mean, he's been the underdog, which I really respect out of him since his college days, really, and probably even before that, where everybody says, okay, well, he can't do it. Well, he came into the draft after his final year in Stanford, and he started out, I think, as a 4th-round pick. And by the time the combines and the workouts and all that kind of stuff, he went from a 4th-round pick to eventually, of course, the 1st-round pick by the Carolina Panthers. In fantasy football, it's sort of the same way. He started off really low, 3rd-round value, maybe 4th-round value. Some probably didn't even have him drafted at all. But after his rookie season, people saw him develop into the player he is. And then he just solidified it by even having a better year than he did his rookie year, which many people thought there was no way, especially in the reception department, that he could be better than what he was his rookie season. Well, he proved everybody wrong by catching 107 passes. So it's those kind of things where I think he's a number five in standard, but very close to being a number one in PPR.
So I had Christian McCaffrey 4. I kind of do, I like to do like a half PPR. I'm a baby. I split the difference. I just think that, he with the question around Cam Newton, he will need to, take a bigger, role in the offense. I think, if it's Derek Anderson, which I don't think it will be, they'll probably, you know, get in like the Tyrod Taylor sweepstakes or, kick the tires on. I don't think they're going to get Nick Foles, but there's a lot of, we'll say quarterback 18 through 25, you know, quarterbacks available, you know, 18 through 25, most talented quarterbacks in the world available in that range, like your Joe Flacco's, your Blake Bortles, stuff like that. So I think they'll kick the tires on one of those guys on a 1 year deal, which means a lot more Christian McCaffrey, because I'm not feeling good about Cam playing next year. And actually, I kind of am hoping they do an Andrew Luck on him and kind of hit the big reset button because it worked for Andrew Luck. But unlike Andrew Luck, just say, hey, we're scrapping 2019, our quarterback, you know, for the future of the franchise. Don't do what the Colts did with Andrew Luck. Like, hey, he's coming back. Hey, he's coming back. Hey, okay, no, he's not coming back. Sorry, guys, we lied to you. But the reason, so I assume that with him at 5, do you have Kamara at 4 or do you have somebody else at 4?
Yes, I actually do have Kamara at number 4.
Okay, so I kept flip-flopping them back and forth, and this is what I landed on with Alvin Kamara behind Christian McCaffrey. Alvin Kamara has averaged pretty much a touchdown per game for his career, and that's been a big part of his production. Also, one of the things I think is going to start happening, because it started to happen towards the end of the season, is I think Drew Brees might slow down a bit. Not enough to really hurt Alvin Kamara, but I think these two factors together, it's like, I probably want Christian McCaffrey over Alvin Kamara because of the yardage, the fact that he was so good, not based around his touchdowns. So it's the sort of thing that's stickier from season to season. And this is, you know, the splittingest of hairs. You know, when you're up here at these top five guys, you kind of got to split hairs, which is why a lot of the times we have the same guys, but it's in, you know, slightly different order, 4 versus 5. And I just, I don't know. We said after his rookie year that Alvin Kamara couldn't keep up his yards per carry or yards per touch production, which for the most part he didn't. And now I see, he probably can't keep up this touchdown rate, because I don't think that Saints offense is going to keep going as fast and as powerful as it has been, just because I think Drew Brees is starting to slow down, which, you know, no shame in that because he's already 40 years old. Just splitting hairs there, just CMC over Kamara, I think, just because sort of like Wilson and Watson, not in age, but in like offense chunk of the pie that they're going to have to take. I think it's going to be Michael Thomas dominated. I honestly think the Saints will bring Mark Ingram back and they might lean on him a little bit more. And Kamara won't have that same, massive production that he had this year. So just splitting hairs. And I felt if I was at number 4, I said, okay, who would I take it for? Man, I sure would feel good about Christian McCaffrey, even though I love Alvin Kamara. I was way in on Alvin Kamara last year and this year. I just kind of feel better about Christian McCaffrey this year.
And, you know, I it's the same way too with me. If I'm at 4 or whatever and it's time for a running back and I have the choice between Kamara and McCaffrey, it's not going to matter to me. You know what I'm saying? Or if McCaffrey goes at 3 and I'm with Kamara, well, fine, or vice versa. It's all really almost non-relevant because I think both players are equally as good and the production is going to probably pretty much be the same by the end of the year.
Yeah. It's kind of like this year, you know, if I'm in a snake draft, I'll take pick 5 is probably where I want to pick. You know, one of the big three guys are gone. The big three guys are going to be gone. One of McCaffrey and Kamara are gone and I'll take the other one. Like, fine. I don't care. It's like last year. You know, it was number three was the spot to have because it was whoever's left over from Gurley, Zeke, and DJ. So it's like, yeah, just whichever one of them's fine. I'll, if I'm the number five pick, I don't care which one of those guys I get. So that it's kind of the same thing this year. So yes. I assume we have the same big three. We'll wrap this all together with the running backs. I assume we have in some order Zeke, Saquon, and Todd Gurley.
No.
What?
No.
Controversy. All right. Which one of those guys? Huh?
A little bit. I don't have Zeke in there.
Wow.
In replace of Zeke, I have Le'Veon Bell.
Oh, see, Lev Bell staying out of my top five till I know where he's going.
And to me, it doesn't really matter where he goes because it's like almost like Saquon Barkley. Everybody was worried, including myself, about how is this rookie going to perform without an offensive line? Well, he did. And I think Bell's the same way. It doesn't matter where he goes. The offensive line is going to be really almost a non-factor for him. He's almost offensive line proof. So it's just going to all go up from there. And by the end of by the time everybody's starting to draft and getting rolling, he's going to move up to the top five anyway. So I'm just going to put him there, even though probably no one at this point has him there, probably for the reason why you said we don't know where he's going to go. And if he goes to some dumpville offensive line, then he's going to be buried. Well, I'm going to zag against that and say that he'll end up being in the top five regardless.
Wow. Next up on Fantasy Pros, their expert consensus ranking for Lev is number 10. And the highest rank anybody has for him is number 7. And a lot of that, you know, it's got to be that uncertainty. I think also there's a, you know, the Colts are pretty good. I think Le'Veon Bell will come to the Colts. What's the best way to put this? Preemptive homerism. I mean, Lev Bell is a great talent. I think a lot of his production did have to do with the scheme, but I mean, he is amazing. So I have no problem. I mean, you basically, this is what I got from you. I'm going to cut the BS. I'm just going to put Lev Bell in my top three right now. Like, I'm just not going to worry about it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So do you have him at 3, 2, 1? Where do you have him?
Right now I have him at 3. And, you know, depends, of course, depending on where he lands, 3 is the worst. And then 1 is obviously the best situation. Like, if he goes to the Colts, I don't see that happening, to be honest with you. As much as I would really want it, I just don't see that happening. And but let's just say he does. He goes to the Colts. You know, obviously that put him at 1. And that could be some homerism, but behind that offensive line and Andrew Luck and I just don't see how he couldn't be number 1.
Yeah. So my number 3 guy is Zeke. Like I mentioned, he was same old Zeke last year. He bounced back, but he did add a new element to his game. He's had 12 career games where he had 6 or more targets. 11 of them were in 2018, including his career high 13 targets in week 14 last year. That was kind of the one thing that was missing from Zeke's game was the targets. And he had 9 touchdowns last year, which was a little low considering he had 16 in his rookie season. It's hard to gauge his sophomore season because I kind of threw 2017 out the window because the whole looming suspension, he was going to be suspended, then he wasn't, then he was, then he wasn't. But he's led the league in rushing yards per game each of the last 3 years. And now if he's adding a receiving aspect to his game, he kicked in 38 yards per game last year from a receiving perspective, and he led the league in touches. So I think you can't go wrong with Ezekiel Elliott. I think he's kind of plug and play, but I have no fault with putting Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara over him like you have. I don't see any fault there because If you don't believe in the Cowboys offense, then, you know, look elsewhere. So I assume our next two guys, I already did what happens when you assume. I made a you know what out of you and me. But who's your number two guy? I'm just going to ask, and I'm going to know the answer.
My number two guy is Todd Gurley.
Wow. You're putting Saquon number one, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Guess what?
You got to reverse.
Me too. Yeah, me too. Because I think that they've learned, and I'm going to step all over your toes here. I'm sorry. I think that they've learned that they can get decent production out of another running back, like they've seen from CJ Anderson in the playoffs. They don't have to lean on Todd Gurley so much, and they're going to try to keep him healthy.
Exactly. That is exactly my point. In fact, I even tweeted out that I think even though CJ Anderson is in a contract and is an unrestricted free agent, I think the Rams are going to sign him and, you know, use him. They probably won't use him, of course, as extensively as they have used him. It's probably going to be reversed, but it's still, like you mentioned, that whatever the magic is, offensive line, receivers, if CJ Anderson can come in there and just dominate like he has, then there's no reason why Todd Gurley needs to be used as like a Melvin Gordon type of guy where he's getting 300 and something carries a game, and I mean not a game, that'd be quite interesting, a season and you know, that kind of thing. So keep the guy healthy. He's a stud, and you won't have to worry about using him out.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in the same exact boat, so I won't belabor the point. So we both have Saquon Barkley number one. This is my thinking of it. Let me know if you're in the same thought process. Rookie year, second overall pick. Giants offense is an absolute disaster. Probably can't get worse than it was in 2018, and he was third in the league in touchdowns. So his 15 touchdowns, and he actually had the most fantasy points overall for running backs because so he actually led the league in running back points. He wasn't first in, he was second in points per game, but if we think that Gurley's going to take that step back, then there's Saquon right there, and he can do everything. He can run over people, he can run around people, he can catch the ball. He can do anything you ask him to, and he's good. So I kind of I don't have much else to say. He's one of the best running backs in the NFL, and they're going to lean on him like crazy.
Yeah, and unlike Gurley's situation, I don't think they have anybody at this point that proves that they can run the way the Barkley can run with that offense. Like as we were saying, Gurley, Rams have shown that almost anybody can step in and run the ball. But with the Giants, it's all been Barkley. Even with, you know, the players that they've had come and spell Barkley, it's not been as electrifying as it's as Barkley as a player. So it's going to be all Barkley this year. And you know, that kind of thing. So
you don't think that Barkley is going to be in a timeshare with Wayne Gallman?
You know, I was thinking about that.
Like a 60-40 split.
Yeah. If maybe 53-47, if Gallman has a really great year.
Well, I mean, you want maybe like 55-50, because you got to get Elijah Penny touches. When you got a guy like Elijah Penny on your squad, you got to get him some touches.
Oh, so. Boy.
Oh, buddy. And I think I said 55-50, which is mathematically impossible. All right. So we'll move on to, we'll do wide receivers next, and we will try to go fast. Next one is, who's your number five?
You know, I went back and forth on this, and I think number five, I'm going to go with Julio Jones.
Julio.
I think it's, I mean, it could be any number of guys, Tyreek Hill, Thielen, Juju Smith-Schuster, Mike Evans. I think with the wide receivers, it's so crowded that it's really difficult to say what player can be a number five by the end of next year. But I think any of those guys are capable. I'll just go with Julio Jones, just because he's been the oldest, he's the more veteran, and that Atlanta offense is pretty esteemed. And he got, what did he end up catching? How many touchdowns last year? I can't remember what it was, but it was more than he normally does. He had eight. Yeah, you know, why not?
Yeah, so Julio is my number five guy as well. Julio Jones. It's just a new offense for him. He's by talent, you know, a top three wide receiver in the league. Big, strong, fast guy, you know, kind of your prototypical wide receiver but Matt Ryan can be really up and down. We mentioned he finally had, we called eight touchdowns a lot more than he usually has. And people like to do the hashtag never Julio thing as sort of facetious, like, oh, Julio Jones will score plenty of touchdowns through regression. But the Falcons offense, at least with Steve Sarkisian, took Julio Jones off the field on the goal line. So we have to hope that Dirk Cutter coming back sort of undoes that stupidity, because it was this insane thing where they would go, you know, nine guys, they would go big and beefy on the front, nine guys all lined up together. One of them's not Julio, and they try to bash the ball, you know, down your throat. So hopefully they undo that in 2019 with the return of Dirk Cutter, but we'll see. But for now, he's number five for me as well. And so we'll move on next to number four. Who is your number four wide receiver for 2019?
Number four, I'm going to go with Tyreek Hill. And with the Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill combination, it's almost unbeatable. The guy, you know, I have to say that coming into this year, I really didn't have much hope for Tyreek Hill. I thought, okay, he had a great year last year or 2 years ago. And, you know, is this going to be one of those players where he's really fast and catches some balls, but, you know, overall he's nothing more than that. Well, he proved me wrong this year with Patrick Mahomes having the season he has. And even when he does regress, probably he's going to lose maybe 10 to 12 touchdowns. It's still not going to affect Tyreek Hill that much. So, you can knock maybe one or two touchdowns down, but explosive, can do it all. The Chiefs love to run multi kind of packages. As we saw against the Colts, he took that end around and took it up for 60 yards on a run. So it's just, yeah, I don't see anybody better as far as the Chiefs depth chart right now. Sammy Watkins, you know, he's always hurt. So his problem is not even nearly as talented. So with that said, I think Tyreek Hill's definitely a number four kind of guy.
I am done doubting Tyreek Hill. I kind of had the, he's a speedster. He's a one-trick pony. He can't do this. He can't do that. Well, he's done it for three seasons. Tyreek Hill's my number two. I'm sorry, my number three. Sorry, Tyreek Hill is my number three, which isn't that crazy. I thought it was kind of crazy, but he was number three this year. I believe he was number one in 2017. He was number five, but he's worked his way up there. Scores a lot of touchdowns. Like you said, he's a speedster. I like him. Fast paced offense. He gets a lot of targets. He is the fastest guy, one of the fastest guys in the league. And Pat Mahomes can throw a deep ball further than anybody in the league. I think he threw the furthest deep ball in like 5 years. I think that was what happened in the preseason. It was like in the air for like 65, 70 yards, something ridiculous. So if you've got a guy that can throw the ball further than anybody, and you've got a guy who can outrun anybody, and that guy is getting 100 and something targets a year. He got 105 targets last year, 137 this year. It's like I said with Tyler Lockett, you know, Russell Wilson would just throw up a 50-yard bomb to Tyler Lockett for a touchdown. Well, if Pat Mahomes and Tyreek Hill are taking that shot 3, 4, 5 times a game, I'm going to bet on that. Because he has that speedster profile where, you know, he gets his 40 yards in a touchdown is like a chunk of his yardage, but he has the ability to do that three times a game. So I'm I'm done betting against Tyreek Hill. I'm done betting against the Chiefs. And that's why I have him as my number three guy. Just because, I mean, again, we're splitting hairs up here. I just like number two and number one a little bit better, their situation and their target volume. So you had him at number four. I had Antonio Brown at number four, and this is actually assuming he does, end up somewhere that's not the Steelers. And it actually is kind of assuming he ends up on the 49ers. So I just think that there was a good thing going with George Kittle. I think George Kittle is going to be the touchdown scorer in San Francisco. And so I think that Antonio Brown will get the targets. He'll get the yards. He'll still be Antonio Brown. He'll be all that stuff. He'll just get a lower touchdown share. And I think it'll just bump him back a little bit. So it's just splitting hairs. I just think that he'll be number four this year. I assume he's in your top three.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I assume that's based off of what you were talking about with Lev Bell, where you're going to lean into that uncertainty. So for me, I put him as four. I'm also leaning into it. I kind of a little wish casting thinking he goes to the Niners, but I just think that even if he goes to the Colts, you have touchdown scorers there. I mean, I think it was Eric Ebron had 500 red zone targets this year. Something like that. I mean, he was the entire red zone and goal line offense for the Colts. So, granted, Antonio Brown's better than Eric Ebron, but T.Y. Hilton's better than Eric Ebron. So it's like, I think it's more a game plan to throw it up to the big boy. So I think that's going to continue a little bit in 2019. Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking that, I mean, there's no way he's going to end up on the Colts, but you said you were talking about it. I was seeing him on the Colts and seeing that the one thing that the Colts do need is probably a deep threat, and Antonio Brown would fit in nicely. So I could envision him running down the sidelines going, you know, sort of Tyreek Hill kind of, and then Luck just lofting him the ball for a touchdown. So, I got a little excited there.
All right. So who's your number three guy?
My number three guy is Antonio Brown.
Okay.
I kind of covered what I saw as Antonio Brown. So we can probably move on if you want.
All right. Number two.
Number two is Michael Thomas.
Ooh.
And the dude is just a glue factory. Anytime you throw the ball to him, he's going to catch it. And what else do you really want from your wide receiver other than to catch the ball and run with it, which he's good at both. So the only thing that kind of worries me a little bit about Michael Thomas is his touchdowns. I don't see him putting up those double digit touchdowns, especially with Drew Brees probably on the opposite end of his career, on, you know, regressing and that kind of thing. So I think it'll be hard for him to get 10 touchdowns this year, but you could probably just mark him guaranteed for over 100 receptions and therefore easily a number two.
And Michael Thomas was he was kind of a 5B for me, to be honest with you. He was in my top five when I first did it because I forgot Tyreek Hill existed somehow. so I was actually, while we were here, I panicked and I was like, I got to bump off Michael Thomas and stick Tyreek Hill in here because I somehow forgot that he existed. So everything you said about Michael Thomas, I agree with. He's super talented. He gets a ton of targets. He's got those vice grip hands. It's just a question of what's of the Saints offense. So I agree with you in terms of question, but he's a, you know, top five, top six player. And like I said, he was in my top five till I remember Tyreek Hill existed. So I'm curious which one of my top two guys you don't have. I'm not going to say my number two. I want to know who your number one is.
My number one, and I'm sure it's probably one of your two, is DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, Nuke Hopkins. Nuke Hopkins is my number two guy.
And he's everything Michael Thomas is, except for he goes deeper, can go catch. So when he's running deeper patterns, of course, it equals more yards. Great bond with Deshaun Watson, and I think they're only going to grow together, and he is going to hit that double digit mark for touchdowns. So with that said, it's pretty close, but I think that it's that one or two touchdown difference for me why I picked DeAndre Hopkins over Michael Thomas.
Okay, yeah. DeAndre Hopkins, Nuke Hopkins, he is my number two. He has a ton of targets. He's pretty much the only game in town for the wide receivers in Houston that's reliable. We'll get to that a little bit when we talk about the playoffs. He has, Mike, I know you're a Warriors fan, right? You watch some basketball.
Oh yeah.
How much, I mean, I'm not sure how avid of a fan you are, but how much basketball do you watch? Do you watch like the All-Star game, like dunk contests and stuff?
Well, I would probably I don't really watch all, I don't watch that, but, I would be more of an avid basketball watcher if we got the Warriors instead of the Kings. So, I'll watch the playoffs on TV. I keep track. I know the Warriors record and that kind of thing. But as far as like a fan, I don't watch them.
You don't watch it avidly. Okay, just real quick, just dig at the Kings. They're up 87-77 on the Memphis Grizzlies right now. Just quick update for anybody following the Kings game from a podcast that's going to be posted the next day. They're up by 10 and it's the fourth quarter. But the reason I ask is, so the dunk contest, the way it's set up is, you know, I'm sure I don't have to explain the dunk contest, but whenever they show it, when they have these huge dunks, they cut away to all the players in the stadium, all the, you know, the actual players who are just there watching the dunk contest, just going berserk. Like you can watch compilations of it, of, you know, guys getting held back, guys fainting, stuff like that. I'm sure you've seen it.
Yeah,
that
to me is more exciting than actually the dunk contest.
So you have that. That's how I feel if the NFL had that culture, that it would be watching DeAndre Hopkins catch the balls he gets. Because DeAndre Hopkins catches balls that nobody else in the NFL is going to catch. He has more highlight catches than anybody else in the league in terms of the actual catch. Like Tyreek Hill has a ton of highlight catches because he'll take a, Tyreek Hill, Odell Beckham, they'll take a 10-yard slant or 8-yard slant and they'll run 60, 70 yards with it. DeAndre Hopkins will like turn around as he's falling down, catch the ball from between the defender's armpit and his body and pull it into him, stuff like that. He has the best body control, the best hands. He can jump out of the gym. He's fast. He's all around package, the best wide receiver in the NFL, I think. But I put him at two because of the offense and the situation, and it's just splitting hairs. But this isn't to say that I don't like DeAndre Hopkins. He is like I said, he has more highlight catches than anybody else in the NFL. He has the dunk contest style catches where it's not like, you know, a lot of Antonio Brown's catches. It's they're good. They're fun. Same with Michael Thomas. They're good. They're fun, but they're not. They don't make the catches that you don't think that they're going to make, if that makes sense. You know, just the insane, I'm going to rip the ball out of the defender's hands, you know, sort of catches. So he's number two, huge target volume. I mean, this guy has had at least 150 targets for four straight seasons. So no questions there. But he's not my number one.
I'm surprised. Who
is? Yeah, my number one, Davante Adams. So the reason that I'm going with Davante Adams over Nuke Hopkins is that everything fell apart for the Packers in 2018. It was the worst case scenario for them. And he still had 885 and 10. He's one of the most prolific touchdown scorers over the last few years. I think that buying into that Aaron Rodgers bounce back. I think that he's going to score a ton of touchdowns. And I think that they have to do a little bit of rejiggering, I guess, DeAndre Hopkins' role, because he can't sustain this amount of targets. And they have guys around him. They have Kiki QT now. They have, hopefully, Deonta Foreman comes back doing well. They'll have, if they decide to keep Demaryius Thomas, that's another thing taken away. I just think that Davante Adams going into 2019 has the chance to score 15, 16 touchdowns. Whereas I think that, DeAndre Hopkins kind of, I don't want to say has a cap, but I think we've seen peak DeAndre the production standpoint of the offense, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they also have a much better defense. So it would behoove the Texans to win more games to slow it down. They don't need to be in shootouts. They don't want to be in shootouts. You don't but when you have JJ Watt patrolling the defense. And so it's split in hairs. I just think that Devontae Adams could have one of those, you know, huge all-time seasons, and DeAndre Hopkins, I think, is kind of maxed out right now. So I have him at number one. That might change as I see things happen and that, but I just think that that's where we stand right now. So we'll move on to tight end. It's already been an hour, so I think we need to speed up a sec. Who's your tight end five? Mike, go.
My tight end five is going to be – God, that's a tough one. I think if Rob
Gronkowski – Can I just say, excellent job speeding it up.
Yeah. I was like, pump the brakes. Oh, God. I think it's going to be Rob Gronkowski if he comes back at number five.
Okay. I have a morass – good word, Jeff, of three guys at 5, 6, 7. I have Hunter Henry, I have Eric Ebron, and I have Rob Gronkowski. I've been on Never Gronk for several years now, so I knocked him down. He's actually 7 for me. I think the Hunter Henry hype's going a little bit far. He hasn't played significant time, in over a year. I mean, he got in, I think it was 14 snaps in the playoff game. But I'm going to go with the guy who I said earlier in the season was the first, second, and third option for the Colts in the red zone, and that's Eric Ebron. Obviously, he cannot have 13 touchdowns again, but I think that even with the return of Jack Doyle, he will still be okay, because when Jack Doyle was in the lineup, when he was fine, people will say, oh, he can't sustain this, he can't sustain that. He's going to be he's the red zone option, the touchdown option for what's going to be a top five offense in the NFL next year. I think it'll be, Chiefs, Rams, if the Steelers get everybody back, which I don't know if they will, the Colts and the Chargers, the Patriots, they'll all be in that running. Again, assuming that Brady and Gronk are back and Belichick are back, which stealth thing. I think if the Patriots win the Super Bowl, I think all three of them retire, but I'm just going to go with Eric Ebron. He's number five. He has the highest chance of busting out in terms of ending up, outside the top 15. If they just decide, hey, Eric Ebron, that was a one-year thing. 2018, we desperately needed you. Now we're going to go back to Jack Doyle. I just don't see that happening because they brought him in as a free agent. So, but I went with Eric Ebron at number five.
Yeah, and on top of that, I think Ebron is a better overall player than Jack Doyle. So, definitely, even though those numbers are going to decline, I think Ebron is still a great weapon.
Thank you. Everybody insists Jack Doyle is good. I don't know why. It's like this mass hallucination that everybody has in the fantasy community that Jack Doyle is somehow better than Eric Ebron. And that's only because Eric Ebron was a top 10 pick and he hasn't lived up to being a top 10 pick, but Jack Doyle came out of nowhere. So it's just like the expectations, like, People are like, I got burned by Eric Ebron in the past, therefore Eric Ebron sucks. It's like, well, no, Eric Ebron's better than Jack Doyle. He's a better player than Jack Doyle, and he finally got to flourish in Indianapolis this year.
Well, let me put it this way. Jack Doyle has good hands, but is not going to catch and run with the ball. He's going to catch and get tackled. Eric Ebron, on the other hand, can run with the ball once
he catches.
So,
and he's a dang freight train, too.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, alrighty, who's your number four guy?
My number four guy is surprisingly, and I really don't want to put him at number four, and I'll tell you why. It's because I don't want anybody else to draft him, and I want him to go as late in the draft as possible. And that's your guy from your team, George Kittle.
Oh wow, George Kittle, number four, huh?
Yeah, yeah. He's, as we saw, the only receiver really on the team was George Kittle. So it's, and you probably could fill in the blanks, but
I'm really upset that you spoke ill of Kendrick Bourne and Richie James and miscellaneous players, Trent Taylor. I'm really upset that you besmirched their names. But yes, George Kittle, I mean, outside of Dante Pettis, who came out the end of the year, only game in town in San Francisco. But I'll let you keep going.
And he did it in and out. It wasn't a surprise who the 49ers were going to go to, and yet he continued to catch the ball. And that tells me that the reason why they can't stop him is because he's a great route runner and he causes mismatches. And that's a dangerous combination because no matter who you put on defense on him, he's either going to outrun you or outsize you or run the more crisper route than you can cover. So he's a dangerous guy. I think he can definitely – I mean, if he ended up as the number one tight end at the end of next season, I wouldn't be surprised. But because he's not showing consistency as far as sample size, as he's done it this year and next year and all those kind of things, he had a great – pretty good rookie season. And then, of course, he solidified his rookie season this year. But the samples, the consistency for per year isn't there. We'll see what he does in 2019. I think he could definitely end up as a number one guy. And if he does that, if he ends up anywhere in the top five, he's going to be one of the top tight ends picked every season. So, yeah, I really – the guy is a monster, and I'm looking forward to seeing him progress.
Yeah, I have Kittle at three. I think that Kittle is at the – he's – I don't – what's the best way to put it? He is going to be guaranteed a target volume, and he is talented enough that he will not fall out of the top three, in my opinion. I mean, I think worst-case scenario is four. But I don't think he will get enough touchdowns to challenge for the top two spots, unless something happens to Ertz or Kelsey. Sort of like we were talking about with Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson, they slot him very perfectly at 4 or 5. I think Kittle just there's my number four guy is OJ Howard. He's a tier below George Kittle, but I think George Kittle is like a half step behind Ertz and Kelsey. So I have him at three. I think it's there. You can almost put it, etch it in stone that he's going to be number three, assuming health for everybody around him. So my guy, number four, OJ Howard. I just think that he's extremely talented. Bruce Arians is going to go to Tampa Bay. He's the head coach there. He doesn't have a great recent track record with tight ends, but I mean, his recent tight ends were like Jermaine Gresham. But back when he had, God, what's his name? Heath Miller. Back in Pittsburgh, he was good there in like 7, 8, 9. He was able to use the tight end. I think Bruce Arians is the kind of guy that he can make his weaponry work. And you know, when you have like Jermaine Gresham, of course your weaponry, you're going to go, if you're going to choose to throw the ball to Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson or Jermaine Gresham, it's like, come on. Of course he had no quality players or no quality tight ends in Arizona, except for my boy Ricky Seals Jones, who he did start going to towards the end of 2017. But OJ Howard, extremely good. Season cut short by injury. He only played 10 games last year, but he was the number five tight end in points per game. Five touchdowns in 10 games. But what I really like is the 34 receptions and 565 yards. You bump that up to like 60 and 800. And you're looking at, top five production, easy. So I had OJ Howard. I just think he'll take a step forward this next season with Bruce Arians and that Tampa Bay offense. I think they need to kind of hit a big reset because they started off really strong and then they stumbled down the stretch. So that's my number four guy is OJ Howard. So who's your number three guy?
My number three guy is David Njoku.
Ooh, Njoku. I like that.
And he's the type of athlete that is you can't really count on a consistent basis, but almost outside of Zach Ertz and Travis Kelce, what tight end can you really say, okay, I'll play him this week and he's going to score his typical points and I'll be happy with whatever he does. So with that said, he's coming in into his third season, and the Cleveland Browns offense is really starting to step up. And I like that growth he has with Baker Mayfield. And I think that we're seeing definitely the signs of light with Njoku, but he's going to even impress even more now that Mayfield and him have had eight games, maybe a little bit more than that, to gel. And then plus they're going to have this offseason. It's really one of those things where it's funny. It's at number three. It's like you mentioned OJ Howard. Oh, I can definitely see OJ Howard there. Hunter Henry. I can see Hunter Henry there. But I want to definitely see Njoku improve and be the player that he can be, the athlete that he is. And therefore I'm going to put my stamp on number three. It's a little shaky, but that's where I have him.
I don't fault you too much on that. I mean, you could take OJ Howard, Hunter Henry, Eric Ebron, David Njoku, Rob Gronkowski, George Kittle, Evan Ingram, throw them all in a bag, shake them up, and that could be your in any order. You know, it's like,
yeah, exactly.
And you can, I mean, if you put George Kittle nine, that's a little indefensible, but you know, those guys in any order, you can kind of just like make it work for any of those guys. And that's what tight end is. I mean, your average tight end, if you get eight fantasy points, you're going to be a top 10 player at the position. So it's touchdown hunting is what it comes down to. And, you know, you can fingers crossed to get a guy like Delanie Walker circa 2015 gets five catches, 60 yards a game. So you don't have to go touchdown hunting. But then on top of that, you get the big boys, which are the next two guys, Ertz and Kelsey. I assume you're not insane and you don't have anybody else in your top two.
No.
It's there's not much to say there. Ertz is number two with the bullet. Kelsey's number one with the bullet.
Yeah. Both. I mean, I think Kelsey is probably the solidified number one. I don't see Ertz outpacing him, but you know, like I'm going to be disappointed that I have Zach Ertz on my team. No.
Yeah. You know what they are? Go back 5 years. You had Gronk, solid. I mean, number one with the bullet. Number two was Jimmy Graham, who, if you're being intellectually honest, was number two with the bullets, but some people would get spicy and try to say that he was number one and better than Gronk, but that wasn't true. It was just like number one, number two. And Kelsey and Ertz have replaced Gronk and Jimmy Graham as number one, number two. And I think it'll be like that for the next, what, 3-4 years, assuming everything goes as it's going. I don't see anybody dethroning them. I mean, you have like George Kittle. There's a lot of question marks there. OJ Howard, he'll probably have a new quarterback in 2020. Hunter Henry will probably have a new quarterback in 2020 or 2021. Eric Ebron's not good enough to be top three. David Njoku, I just don't think that Browns offense is built around throwing to David Njoku. There's not really any contenders to them being number one and number two for the time being. Am I crazy?
No. It was actually a thought that I had about midway through the season where I was just exactly like that. There, to me, it's one and two. It's a lock. My preference, of course, is Kelsey, but it's either one of those two guys. There's nobody else.
Yeah, it's the smart move. Don't overthink it. And looking at, I mean, there's only 13 people that have chimed in on the Fantasy Pros rankings for 2019, but literally nobody put anybody but Ertz and Kelsey one and two. Nobody put Ertz and Kelsey anywhere else but one, two, or three. That's it. I know that Heath Cummings is the guy who put Zach Ertz three. Because he put George Kittle number two because he's worried about Dallas Goedert, which I'm not worried about that. I think that that's kind of an overblown concern for Philly. I think that Goedert is Ertz insurance. So those are our top five guys going into 2018. We're going to talk about the playoffs, but I think we'll just do lightning round on the playoffs. We'll just go through the teams that have been eliminated, I guess, and then we'll just give a quick sort of like we did for the season, Mike. Like, what are you looking for in the off season? What question do you have going into 2019 about the team? And then we'll sign off. We'll do a little bit of lightning round for this because we're going a little bit long. So we'll go in the order that the games went. So first game of the offseason of the that was on NFL.com was Indy 21, Houston 20. Houston was eliminated then. My question is, I think I mentioned it earlier, can Watson bring the rest of the offense with him? Anybody else other than DeAndre Hopkins and Lamar Miller? Is it going to be Kiki QT? Is it going to be Deonta Foreman, which I don't think it is. I think Deonta Foreman's a wasted draft pick in the 2019 draft. Are they going to bring somebody in? Is it going to be a tight end? That's my question, is Deshaun Watson going to bring anybody else with him other than DeAndre Hopkins and Lamar Miller?
Yeah, and I think that's pretty much right on. I'm more focused. I'm not so much focused on the tight end position. I am focused on the running back position and who's that's going to be. I just don't see Lamar Miller being a standout, a focal point. So I'm curious on if anybody else is going to stand up at running back other than Lamar Miller.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be Foreman just because, look it up, literally no running back has come back effective from Achilles tear in the NFL. Not a single running back. So just keep that in mind when you're when you think that he might be a value pick in round 9 next year. Next game, Dallas 24, Seattle 22. The game that I was rooting for, really, to be honest with you, was a meteor hitting the stadium because as a 49ers fan, there are a few teams that I hate more than the Seahawks and the Cowboys. Unfortunately, one of them is playing in the Super Bowl. For that one, Seattle was eliminated. My question I talked about with Russell Wilson, but will Russell Wilson run again in 2019? Will Doug Baldwin be good again next year? Will Rashad Penny ever play? What's going on with Tyler Lockett? I think Tyler Lockett is going to have the widest range of possible outcomes from any out of any wide receiver that gets drafted inside the top like 36, we'll say, because he could end up wide receiver 15. He could end up wide receiver 55 next year pretty easily. He has the highest range of outcomes.
Yeah, I don't have a debate about that. That's very true. He's one of those guys that you just really don't know about. He could blow it up or just stink out the joint. I want to see if Seattle can actually, and again with the running back position, focus on less than five players. Can they not have five different running backs come in and do different roles? That would really help my fantasy decisions out quite a bit.
Yeah, Seattle with Brian Schottenheimer kind of knew was going to be a little bit of a weird offense to be dealing with just because Schottenheimer's been bad pretty much everywhere he's gone. So we'll see what 2019 looks like for them. Game on the list is the Chargers 23, Baltimore 17, a game that I thought the Ravens were going to stomp the Chargers like they did on Christmas Eve. But my question for 2019 is Lamar Jackson in 2019. So from a fantasy perspective, does he have the possibility of being a top 10 quarterback, or is there their game plan that they have with Lamar Jackson, which is slow the game down, keep the ball forever, and don't have a lot of big flashy plays, even as a potential? You know, a good play for the Ravens goes for 12 yards, and that's by design because they're trying to slow the game down and keep the opposing team's offense off the field. Like, will that game plan limit the possibilities for Lamar Jackson in 2019? So that's sort of what I'm thinking about with the Ravens next year. With the Ravens for fantasy next year.
Yeah, and can a wide receiver actually step up with a Lamar Jackson playing at the quarterback position? And is Gus Edwards really for real? Is something I'll be looking into.
Yeah, and there was a possibility that I saw that Michael Crabtree might be a cap casualty for the Ravens. So it would be what, like John Brown as the guy that might take a step forward, but we'll see. So next game up on the list was Philly 16, Chicago 15. The Bears were eliminated by literally the narrowest of margins. Has already been replaced in spirit because the Bears brought in a kicker today. But my question for 2019 is there's the big rumor that bringing in Kareem Hunt. as a Bears fan, or if I was a Bears fan, I wouldn't be happy with that. I don't, because he's going to be suspended probably 6 games next year. So what happens with that backfield if they bring in Kareem Hunt? Are they keeping Jordan Howard? Are they like, what is going on there? Is that offense going to be worth investing in a running back? And because if it's Tariq Cohen, Kareem Hunt, and Jordan Howard, you would almost rather sidestep the whole situation than try to guess who's going to play each week.
Yeah. And I think if they do bring in Kareem Hunt, that definitely will help. Another thing about the Bears too is is Allen Robinson really the guy that they're going to lean on? And is Trey Burton the tight end that they really need to have in this offense as well? They got the defense locked down, but the offense has me concerned, especially with Mitch Trubisky, who had – he had a good spurt of, what, 4 games? And then petered out. So, yeah, all those kind of positions have me curious on what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel as well. Okay, next one up, we won't dwell on it. KC 31, Indianapolis Colts 13. Let's just move on to the next one. I won't rehash painful memories for you. About Eric Ebron. Yeah, we talked about it. Can Eric Ebron stay in his 2018 form? That's my question. And can Marlon Mack stay in his 2018 form as well? So that's kind of where I stand on the Colts. Any question there for the Colts?
I think how the Colts are going to address the offseason at the wide receiver position is my major concern. They need someone that is a deep threat. They need someone that can be a solidified number two. I mean, Dontrell Inman played really great. Ryan Grant played really great at times. I mean, not great as far as Pro Bowl material, but good enough to not look like a fool out there. But those guys aren't number two receivers. They're number three receivers. So what will the Colts do in the offseason to get at least a solidified number two receiver?
Yeah, that's what I was going to – when you were mentioning those guys, that's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say those are number three, number four guys. Those are depth pieces. Those aren't, you know, your number two wide receiver. Good receiver. So, you know, do you think they'll draft a guy or bring somebody in a free agent? See.
I think – well, they're in a good spot to draft, I think, a wide receiver because they're picking, I think, like 26 or something to that effect. So usually you could find the fourth best ranked wide receiver there. So it's definitely an option. They got a lot of money, as we know, as we talked about. And so I'm hoping that they go out and get at least someone proven. If they're not going to address the Le'Veon Bell situation, then at least bring in someone that is a top-tier wide receiver that's a free agent.
I'm going to name a player who's an unrestricted free agent that you didn't know that you desperately wanted on your team that is a perfect fit, and it will suddenly become your obsession with getting him on the Indianapolis Colts on a, we'll say, 2-year deal with a team option for the third year.
Okay.
Golden Tate.
I'll take it.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's exactly, a strong, powerful possession receiver who has, you know, he can be Andrew Luck's release valve, let T.Y. Hilton do what he does best, which is fly down the field. Golden Tate. Or, Mike, are you sitting down for this?
Uh-huh.
2019. Andrew Luck's in the Super Bowl.
All
right. He's down by four. They're down by six. They need a touchdown to tie the game, to go into overtime or to win. Andrew Luck drops back. He throws it he sees him open in the end zone. Old reliable, Mr. Colts touchdown. The prodigal son returns. Dante Moncrief for the touchdown. The guy who for years had fantasy relevance because he was a wide receiver that Andrew Luck threw the ball to. That was literally the only reason he mattered.
He was that because of all those touchdowns that he caught with Andrew Luck was the only reason why he had a name for himself. He couldn't do anything else on that field except for catch a touchdown.
Oh yeah. it would be too funny if he came back. But honestly, if I was you guys, I would, I mean, Golden Tate, that sounds perfect. To me, that sounds perfect for what the Colts need. Receiver to go over the middle. So you're welcome. Who's your GM? Chris Ballard? Call Chris Ballard. Let him know.
No, I'll definitely reference you too.
I'm sure Chris Ballard didn't notice. He's like, oh man, Golden Tate's going to be available? Wow. Okay. So next one up, Chargers lost to the Patriots 28-41. And honestly, it wasn't even that close. My question is what will Hunter's Henry return do for the target volume? A lot of targets this year went to the running backs. And I think Mike Williams will also have a bigger target volume. So I really want to know what the pie is going to look like in 2019. Will Melvin Gordon, Austin Eckler get fewer targets? Will Keenan Allen get fewer targets? Like, what are we looking at there? 2019.
Yeah, I definitely think Keenan Allen is probably on that side of getting a shorter list of targets, just because obviously Henry is a better wide receiver than the Antonio Gates Hall of Famer that had to come out of retirement and join them for one last ride. But, and also Phillip Rivers, you know, what's going to happen with him as far as how is he going to perform? So yeah, it definitely is going to be an interesting situation with Henry and the new offense.
All righty. Next one up, Rams 30, Dallas 22. My question is what does Amari Cooper I guess this isn't a question for Amari Cooper as much as this is a question for the fantasy community as a whole. Is the fantasy community going to wishcraft Amari a top 12 wide receiver for average draft position again, like they did a couple years ago? They just desperately wanted him to be a wide receiver one. So they sort of just kind of thing that they didn't like about it and just said, hey, look, he's a wide receiver one by average draft position. And then he flopped. I think he's more in the like 15 to 18 range. Not a top, not a top 12 wide receiver, but you know, maybe I could be talked into it. I don't know. But yeah, that's my question for them going into 2019 is like, is Amari Cooper going to get that same helium that he got 2017 that I put on him in 2018? Is that going to happen again in 2019 without him returning on it? Like, are we going to get burnt by him again, I guess?
Yeah, it definitely has me worried. He played great coming over to Dallas. There's no doubt about it, but I don't know. And to go along with that, I really want to see how well Michael Gallup develops. And if he can develop, that'll definitely make Amari Cooper's life much easier.
Oh, yeah. I'm counting on a Michael Gallup breakout for next year. So don't even worry about that. That's not even a question. Alrighty. Next one up is New Orleans 20, Philly 14. My big question for this is, what does the backfield look like in 2019? Jay Ajayi, who everybody kind of forgot was on the Eagles this year. he's an unrestricted free agent going into 2019. Do they bring him back? Do they have Josh Adams, Wendell Smallwood? Does Darren Sproles play his 400th season in the league? Do they draft somebody? Do they sign a free agent? Like, what does their backfield look like in 2019? Because if they can solidify all that production into one player, that'll be a valuable role. They kind of did that with Josh Allen. They kind of did that with Josh Adams for 3 or 4 weeks there towards the middle end of the season. But are they going to get a guy that they can kind of roll everything into? Because that would be just by what the offense is. And if he's a decently talented back, that's a top 15 running back in my eyes.
Yeah, for sure. My question would be, can the real basically Carson Wentz stand up? And well, you know, or is he going to be one of those quarterbacks that just can't get over the injury bug? So that's something I'm interested in seeing the outcome of.
Yeah, that's a good call as well. So next one up, we're going to get to the championship games. The Rams took down the Saints 26-23. The Saints probably should have won that game. And by should have, I mean, they had the worst blown call in the history of blown calls. But That's not what we're worried about. For 2019, I talked about it earlier, is towards the end of the season, Drew Brees fell off a cliff. And what does that mean for the 2019 iteration of the New Orleans Saints? His limited arm strength as his career wanes was on full display towards the end of the year. And is that going to be a problem for Tre'Quan Smith if Ted Ginn's back? Are they going to lean on the running game more, or are they going to get a tight end? Are they going to get like who's a free agent? Jared Cook, something like that. What does Drew Brees' limited arm strength and his advanced age mean for the Saints in 2019? That's my big question for the Saints.
Yeah, I can't disagree. The only thing I can think of is maybe Mark Ingram and Kamara. What's that going to shake out? Are they going to decide on one running back? That kind of thing. And definitely, is there a number two receiver for the Saints? Number two, talking tight end, wide receiver, or is it just Alvin Kamara going to be that number two guy?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good call because Brees, I mean, historically, he's kind of had his number one guy and spread it around to the secondary targets, which he did again this year. But I think as he gets older, he'll probably hone in on fewer players probably. So last game we're going to talk about, God is dead and the Patriots are in the Super Bowl again. 37-31, they beat the Chiefs. Chiefs had a heck of a comeback in the AFC Championship game, 24 of their points in their fourth quarter, but ultimately it didn't matter because Tom Brady did Tom Brady things. Big question for the Chiefs is 2019, if they don't bring in another running back, is Damian Williams like a top 15 running back next year? Because it's sort of like we had with James Conner this year. It doesn't matter who you plug in there. As long as they're reasonably talented, it seems that they will produce. Just because the offense is so potent, you have to account for so many different weapons that it opens up a lot of holes for the running back. Like we're kind of also seeing with the Rams and CJ Anderson. So is he a top 15 running back next year just by virtue of being on the Chiefs?
Yeah, I mean, and it's not like he came in for like three games and was productive. He did it for a good duration. And, you know, I think Spencer Ware did it for a good duration. Yeah, it's one of those offenses that is so good that it opens up holes for all the other things just because you can't guard everybody. Sort of like the Warriors, you know. Warriors, it's just impossible to guard everybody, and you know that one of those players is going to have a good night and all the other players are going to have great nights just because you can't guard everybody.
You had to bring up the Warriors again.
DeMarcus Cousins.
DeMarcus Cousins. Yeah, I already got a technical foul for the Warriors. Welcome. Welcome to being a Kings fan for the last half decade. But speaking of being a Kings, just in case you are following the game through this podcast, they did beat the Memphis Grizzlies 96-99. Good road win for the Kings. Puts them back above 500, which is honestly awesome. So, yeah. So thanks for listening to Kings Cast. But yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back on a more regular schedule. It's kind of one of those things where everything fell apart and a little bit of a break from going full bore for a while. So if you stuck with us, thanks for listening. Please rate, review on iTunes. We are on Spotify as well. The Twitter account for the website is FBallAbsurdity. We're a little slow right now. We're kind of took our feet off the pedal for January. Evan's still doing his things, fascinating facts. Did you know, Mike, that this is the first time in NFL history that the number two seeds have faced off against each other?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, Evan pulled that up before the championship games. I've been thinking about it ever since. It's just wild to me that this is the first time the number two seeds have ever played against each other. So that's the kind of stuff that Evan Hoovler, he's the lead editor. He does all the editing. And he pulls out fascinating facts. He does a lot of yeoman's work for the website, some that he pulled out. So Evan's still doing that. But the day after the Super Bowl, we're going to start publishing. I already got my sleepers and busts written up for 2019. I'm going to have my top 10 at each position going up, and all that's going up right after the Super Bowl. And then we're going to start looking at rookies for next year. So kind of a took the foot off the gas for January because it is playoffs, a lot of things we needed to solidify. But we're going to have a lot of good stuff going up there for 2019. And we're working on having a full player profile draft kit put together for next year. So that'll be a lot of fun to do. So website, like I said, footballabsurdity.com. Twitter is fballabsurdity. I am JM Crisco on Twitter. Mike is RFL Red Zone. And I really want to thank, everybody who came together today and got the government reopened so that Mike and I could podcast again, because, the last month or so without paycheck, podcasting is serious business, and, not having those government funds to bring you guys this podcast has really been rough. So I'm glad we're all back to work. Right, Mike?
Yeah. I'm counting the change in my wallet as we speak.
big podcast money. we're funded by Capital B Big Capital P Podcast. So, all right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening, and have a good one. Bye.